From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
If you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. Peaches and cream.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, how Warner Brothers used interactive tricks to power a surprisingly big opening weekend for the film Where the Wild Things Are. Plus, TV writer-producer Dan Harmon toiled in basic cable on Comedy Central and VH1. Now, as creator of NBC's Community, he lets us in on how the game is different on a big broadcast network. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stay close. It's The Business from KCRW.
Imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
I'm joined in the studio by The Business guest banterer, John Horn of the LA Times. And I'll just say at the outset here, John, don't worry about me. I have a little bit of a cold, but I'm getting better.
As long as it's not swine flu.
Apparently not. So let's talk about our friends at NBC. Jeff Gaspin, the newish chairman of NBC. It has been out on the town spreading a new message. He is not managing for margins, as his predecessor, Ben Silverman, said. He's actually managing for ratings. They actually want to, they decided at NBC that they want to put on shows that people watch.
That's a eureka thought. What a great idea.
It's like a thing that NBC does. When things aren't working, they announce a new strategy. Except in this case, it's really the oldest strategy there is, which is we're going to get ratings.
Maybe if they don't spend anything on their programs, then even if nobody watches them, they'll still be profitable.
But he is pointing to deals with J.J. Abrams and Jerry Bruckheimer. And as you know, they do not work for free or even for cheap.
So, no, I don't think they get out of bed for less than $1 million.
Right. It's kind of mystifying. They have this reduced little space for scripted programming, and they're spending a lot of money.
No, and JJ and Jerry obviously have made their money in scripted shows, so it seems like, I don't know, contradictory messages.
Very contradictory, and you know, everybody's just kind of waiting for the Comcast deal to happen and NBC Universal to be controlled by Comcast, and who knows, maybe it seems like a good idea to tell people that you're interested in running a network before you are taken over. I don't know.
I like that argument.
Moving on to other things that don't seem to be working out terrifically well. The Iowa Incentives Program, and this is a state that had a very generous 50% tax credit for films shooting in Iowa, it seems to have come to grief in a scandal that was exposed by the Wall Street Journal.
Well, I have to say, Iowa's not the first state to deal with this, and they probably won't be the last. I mean, every state in the nation is trying to come up with some sort of, you know, get-rich-quick scheme where they throw tens of millions of dollars at Hollywood producers to come film in their states. And in theory, it makes great sense. But when you start giving huge amounts of money to somebody who's not either well-versed in Hollywood accounting or maybe is well-versed in Hollywood accounting, that's why we have people getting in trouble, it just seems like it's a recipe for disaster. And in New Orleans, there are three officials who were involved either in handing out tax credits or receiving them who are now in jail for a combined 8 years. And one of them is the former state official in charge of the film tax credit program.
And this story in the Wall Street Journal has the kind of detail that we don't get to see so much in these straitened times, such as the fact that one film director spent $61,000 to buy a Range Rover with this subsidized money, and another one $67,000 to buy a Mercedes. And
Kim, that's what producers need to get around in. Do you expect them to ride bicycles?
This is supposed to be the
director. Prius?
But John, here's what's intriguing. So this was supposed to be a director called Bruce Isaacson working on a film called South Dakota. And I actually tried to figure out what that was. And I looked on IMDb, and he's got one credit listed on IMDb from 1995 as an actor. I don't see him listed as a director, and I find no listing for a film called South Dakota. So I'm sure it exists because apparently quite a lot of money was spent shooting it in Iowa. But I'd like to know what that is.
I think what's happening with all these states is it's just a gold rush. I mean, it's a pot of money, and people are flooding to every state in the nation trying to get some of these incentives, even if they have movies that are not quite legitimate. And I think that's where the wheels are coming off.
But this is going to stop, right? I mean, the states cannot afford this kind of thing. It's too
California
mushy.
California is certainly hoping so, but it's always hard. I mean, it's true on a federal level. It's true on a state level. It always looks weird when you're giving money to Hollywood productions because it feels like, A, they're going to spend $60-some-odd thousand $1 million on a Range Rover, or B, they make $1 million anyway, so why do they need taxpayer help? I mean, this is the same problem that the Motion Picture Association is grappling with.
Speaking of which, we're going to have a new head of the Motion Picture Association. Was that a graceful transition or what?
I thought it was good.
I felt like a ballerina. So Dan Glickman, he hasn't been there that long, but he is telling us that he, as many have expected, is not staying.
I think this is a thankless job. It's a little bit like being the producer of the Academy Awards. People are only going to criticize what you didn't get done or just the things that they wish they could do that are impossible to get accomplished. I mean, Glickman did get $400 million in federal tax incentives, but you know, he's working for studios that don't always agree on what the strategy should be. He's trying to fight piracy, which is rampant, and because of staff cutbacks, they have, you know, fewer people to fight piracy. It just feels like the MPAA is fighting the fight with one hand tied behind their back, and that doesn't even touch movie ratings, which I think is going to be a continuing story going ahead.
That is a whole other subject, but I will say it's certainly not in the days now like when it was Jack Valenti taking orders from Lou Wasserman, who was guiding the entire industry. We are far, far from that, and it may be that this is not a possible job to do.
Well, listen, what's good for Sony may not be good for Disney,
right.
And what's good for Disney may be bad for Fox, and you're having to serve all these masters while you're trying to get Washington to support Hollywood. It seems like it's a well-paying job. It makes more than $1 million, but I think there are a lot of sleepless nights.
And who's being talked about for this wonderful job?
Well, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger is going to be term limited pretty soon.
There's a joke in there, right? Term limiterated.
Term limited. You'll be term limited.
Yeah. Okay.
Bob Pisano, who has run SAG and has been in the LA office of MPAA, is another name that's been thrown about, as says Harold Ford Jr., a Tennessee congressman.
Yeah, that's what I think I heard.
So we'll see. I think somebody who could really flex his muscles and go into Washington and get something done would be an inspired choice.
And that is all the news that's fit for bantering. Thanks, John.
Thank you, Kim.
This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. The interactive space isn't the most easily understood phrase, but it's become increasingly important in selling Hollywood movies. In some ways, it's easier to define interactive by saying what it isn't. It's not passively watching a movie trailer on TV or glancing at a billboard as you drive by. Interactivity involves your participation. It could be when you're on the internet. Most interactivity happens at social networking sites like Facebook. But it also includes iPhone apps, video games, anything that lets you interact with a movie marketing campaign. Michael Tritter is Senior Vice President for Interactive Marketing at Warner Brothers. He's been at the studio for 14 years, and when he started out, he was really in a kind of backwater, building basic websites for movies. It's an understatement to say that a lot has changed since then. We started out by asking Tritter how Warner Brothers uses the mighty engine of social networking.
I look at two recent examples of films where social networking was a huge part of it, The Hangover and Wild Things, but both very different. Whereas Hangover, we had a lot of pieces of content that people were passing along and sharing on Facebook.
But meaning clips from the film.
Clips from the film or games or things where people could put themselves into the poster, interactive pieces like that.
Uh-huh.
Where we got a great deal of, a good number of fans before the movie opened, but then the movie itself also became the biggest piece of content that people wanted to share and talk about. So we had a tremendous, tremendous growth in the number of fans on Facebook after the film opened. Whereas Wild Things, you had this. First of all, it was a book that has been around since 1963, which everybody knew and loved. You also had a great deal of creative materials out there that people loved and wanted to share. So that became a very compelling content that people wanted to share and pass along. So we actually ended up with well over 1 million fans on Facebook before the film even opened.
So how would you bait the hook for Wild Things? This is a movie that just was obviously kind of a marketing challenge. It was a kid's book, but you had this sort of hipster director, and you wanted to reach young adults more, as much as kids, or maybe even more so.
Yeah, the campaign was really aimed primarily at young adults and adults. I think what we were able to do online, because of the great fragmentation of online outlets, you can go more niche and maybe target audiences you can't necessarily get on television. For lack of a better word, a younger urban kind of hipster audience. So while we did you know, mirror the big broad campaign. You know, we bought on Yahoo and YouTube and some of the AOL properties. We also bought on, like, on the music service Pandora. We did a really large campaign with the guys at Vice Magazine and their online properties. So, you know, it's segmented, but in a way that the different messaging doesn't necessarily have to interfere with each other, which I think is something that's a little easier to do online. I think you can go more niche and reach out directly to those people.
And where do the filmmakers come in? How do they help you?
The filmmakers, it's been an interesting journey. At first, nobody cared, but now it's much more. You're starting to get people who are as much online as anybody. You know, Zack Snyder on 300 and Watchmen was as involved as any director ever is in anything that we would do, and has his own ideas of things that would work online, and he's usually right.
Can you think of something he suggested that was a real smart move?
One of the ideas that Zack came up with was actually on Watchmen, which was this very, very well-known graphic novel. And it takes place in 1985, and there's a corporation that the villain of the story runs, the Veidt Corporation. And he actually said, what if we let people make commercials for Veidt products? Because there's product throughout the novel, there's advertisements throughout the novel. And he said, what if we let people make their own commercials and have a contest where they post them on YouTube, and if some of them are good enough, I'll put them in the movie. And 6 months later, after we worked it out with the lawyers, we actually did do this contest. And we had a great number of entries, and people actually put up these 30-second spots. We gave them assets. We gave them logos and products and things like that. And people put together some really pretty amazing commercials for these products that never existed, but in the style of a 1985 commercial. And two of them actually made it into the film. So that's,
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And what about Spike Jonze on Where the Wild Things Are? Did he come to this with ideas, or did he come to it reluctantly?
No, he definitely came to it with an open mind. The main thing that Spike wanted was for things to feel, you know, organic and personal and different, and not just like a traditional, you know, marketing for a kid's film. We did this iPhone application where you can actually, in addition to looking at all the materials for the film and playing with it, you can actually play with one of the wild things. You can, it's Carol, you can tickle him and you can throw dirt clods at him and he'll run up and smash your screen and he'll take pictures of your friends and eat them and things like that. And that was very much a collaboration with Spike, because we showed him an early thing. He's like, well, what if Carol would, like, you know, smash something? Or what if Carol would, like, run through your contacts and start eating things? And we're like, we'll see if we can do that. and so we got it to a point, you know, back and forth, where he was definitely contributing great ideas.
Now, do you have budgets that are separate from the you have the TV spend and you have the dwindling print spend? Are there budgets for online spend that are separate?
The budgets are all part of the overall spend. The reason our budgets are so integrated is because as more people are spending time online, millions of people are still watching a popular show, but they're on Facebook at the same time. So I think the future of what we're doing a lot is more kind of integrated campaigns where, for example, on Watchmen, we did a very big campaign with NBC where we had exclusive content on NBC shows that pointed to things that we were doing online, and our online stuff was pointing to the availability of this exclusive content on NBC. You know, there are some problems with television with the DVR where commercials that you can skip, so now this is a way of getting around that. It's kind of DVR-proof when you do these big integrated campaigns. I think you're going to see more and more of that.
Now, are there sometimes when you try to be really mysterious with these things and just tease it out really gradually online?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that...
Is that mysterious enough? There are certain films where the directors want things to be as secret as possible. You know, we have a Christopher Nolan movie coming out next July, who's the director of The Dark Knight, and it stars Leonardo DiCaprio. And currently, if you go to the website for it, there's a spinning top.
And that's it.
And that's it.
A lot of people looking at that spinning top?
Yeah. A lot of questions.
Yeah? Can they send in questions like, what is the top spinning for?
No, they're talking about it. But, I mean, it's also of a piece with the teaser trailer that went out, which is also shows glimpses of the film but does not say what it's about. It probably asks more questions than it answers.
And you don't have the trailer up on the website, just the top?
The trailer is available online. It's not on the website, but you can see it at Yahoo or at any of the other big trailer places.
Now, as far as Twitter goes, we hear a lot about the Twitter effect on movies. Like, this is the idea that as kids are watching a movie, they are maybe even literally sitting in the theater going, this is great or not so great, and that can accelerate the failure or success of a film.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Do you think that's real?
I think it's still too small a part of the whole. I mean, word of mouth is word of mouth, of course. Just in general, word of mouth has been amplified by technology, but I, you know, in some ways, Facebook has probably had more of an effect.
Is it particularly useful in your work in promoting the films?
It can be. I mean, we have our own Twitter feeds, and some of our directors have their own Twitter feeds. It's a really good way of keeping people, keeping people in the loop as to what's happening if they want to know. I mean, anytime we have any new piece of content, we can immediately, you know, send it out to 35,000 people by putting up the link on our Warner Brothers Pictures feed. Kevin Smith, who's directing one of our movies coming out next year, has over 1 million followers. So any piece of content that we want to get out there, any news that we want to get out there, we have a very, very immediate direct channel to a lot of people who will be interested.
Tritter is the Senior Vice President of Interactive Marketing for Warner Brothers. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Did you decide to check out where the wild things are after playing with an iPhone app? Have you ever been lured to a movie thanks to some clever marketing in the interactive space? Let us know on our website, kcrw.org/thebusiness. Dan Harmon is the creator of Community, the new NBC sitcom starring Joel McHale as a disgraced lawyer who has to go back to community college.
What is community college? You've heard it's loser college.
For remedial teens, 20-something dropouts, middle-aged divorcees, and old people keeping their minds active as they circle the drain of eternity.
Like many who have aspired to make TV shows, Harmon worked for years trying to figure out how this game is played. Back in 1999, he co-wrote a bizarre sci-fi comedy pilot for Fox called Heat Vision and Jack, with Ben Stiller directing and Jack Black and Owen Wilson in the lead roles. That one didn't work out, and neither did a lot of other stuff, but in 2006, Harmon and his writing partner teamed up with comedian Sarah Silverman to create her show on Comedy Central. A couple of years later, still hoping to play in the majors, he found himself trying to sell executives at Sony on an idea for a TV show that could be right for a big broadcast network.
So I went in there and I pitched them the five things I'd been thinking about: my time travel shows, my robot shows, my alien shows, my shows about the people that produce your dreams. And I said, I know you're going to pass on these. And they said, you're right. And I said, so let's go to real world experiences. I was a dishwasher at a rehab center. And they said, okay, tell us more about that.
Uh-huh.
And I exhausted myself. It sounded very dark. And maybe that's an HBO pitch.
Right.
And I worked at a carnival when I was very young. And there's been a show about a carnival. And nobody watched it. And then finally, yeah, I went to community college. And they immediately recognized that as like, okay, now that's television. That's network television.
So what does that mean? Do we know?
That's something that your mom and Einstein can love. That's something for the nuns and the pimps.
So you produced Sarah Silverman for Comedy Central. And so how is that different, that experience of basic cable, different from that's network?
I just always found myself in basic cable not intimidated by the guy that designed the chair that the character was sitting in. And now it's like you're really among masters. I mean, my production designer is on Community is Derek Hill, and he did Pirates movies, and he's like legendary in that craft. And I walk onto the sets that he designs based on a page in a script he reads, and I genuinely have the feeling that I am outclassed by my own employees. I feel like I am going to let these people down because it's the top of its game, no matter what you say about that game. Everyone's an expert at what they do. And that's a very interesting experience. And it's one of my biggest weaknesses coming from the wasteland of basic cable. I often characterize myself as like Mad Max because I learned to survive in this wasteland. And even though maybe I'm better equipped to handle a crisis with resourcefulness, but that's another way of saying I'm kind of tracking crisis into this place. Like I'm sort of a sometimes I feel like a savage, and everybody else is like in polo shirts going like, what's with caveman
scared
here? Like,
guy.
Why is he so ready for a fight?
When we return in a minute, TV writer-producer Dan Harmon, creator of the NBC show Community, compares life on basic cable with his new gig on a major broadcast network. You're listening to The Business from KCRW. We'd love to know what you think. Write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com or go to the comment page for today's show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. Business, and I'm Kim Masters. Dan Harmon is the creator of Community, a new sitcom on NBC. Harmon had his first real television success as writer-producer of The Sarah Silverman Show on Comedy Central. We asked him about the differences between working for a basic cable channel and a big broadcast network.
Basic cable, it's a little more laissez-faire when you're staffing. You're a little more able to just hire your drinking buddies, and like they just want the content to be good, and so there's a little more like kind of micromanagement in the content side because they let you do whatever you want in getting there. On the network side, I think it's just because the schedule is faster and more merciless. Therefore, who are you hiring? Like, what did this person write? Let me see that. Like, how many women do you have, like, on your staff? I noticed it's 1 out of 9. Don't you think you need and also just politically, like, what experience does this person have? Like, what is their title going to be, and are they going to get along with so-and-so? They really – and I think the reason for that is that they know from their experience. It's like that's your last chance to really control things to your satisfaction, because – all of TV is sort of built on this principle of like there's no time to box the writer out. There's no it's going too fast, and so they try to help it as much as they can, but everybody sort of has that excuse at the end of the day of like, oops, sorry, we did the best we could with the time
with
we
the
had.
Time.
So they, I, my experience was in staffing the show was like, wow, why do you care so much about who my writers are? Shouldn't that be? But it makes sense now looking at how these things work.
Chance
they
to.
Want the system to be intact,
right?
Because that's how your show is going to live or die. That's what I am learning right now.
So you either, when Sarah Silverman, you might have gotten more notes about, we don't like the part where she drinks the coffee in the coffee shop,
yeah,
as opposed to
absolutely.
This one, it's more like, we don't like the person that you hired because we don't see what the experience is that's going to serve us.
Yeah, well, in the beginning stages, and then in the script stages, like they do give notes, but the notes are more, are you sure you're not leaning too hard on the sexual angle between these two characters? You know, do you want to revisit this scene? So like smarty pants notes, and not like, I don't really get this joke. Like, and that's why the meticulousness in assembling your staff, like that stuff, it's sort of up to you to police whether or not your jokes are funny or people are getting them. They kind of defer to you when it comes to joke, for line, for line, for line.
And with Sarah Silverman, would they actually come back and say, this joke ain't funny?
Yeah, you would go through line by line. Go, I don't get this. What is this? What do you mean, a peanut allergy? Oh, it's, you know, and that would include even outlines too. So
are they actually looking at your final script at NBC, or are they just coming to the table read and sort of getting the big picture? And
no, they're definitely. It's all digital now. It's all email. It's like they could, the big event is the table read. That's the pivotal thing. And by the way, you kind of each showrunner has options. You can create the pipeline that makes you the most comfortable. You sort of negotiate that. That's one of the first things that you do when you get your series pickup. I'm acting like I'm an expert. This is things that I'm learning from the guys that ran Scrubs, who work for me as my number twos.
Right.
You know, one of the first things you do is you find what makes everyone comfortable in terms of how many checkpoints are there going to be in this pipeline. Too many is going to bog things down. Too few is going to make everybody unhappy with the amount of input they have. And if you strike a balance, in our version, you know, the studio and network get a draft that is going to be read in front of everybody on Monday. They get that draft on Friday. So they have time to digest it, and then they also have sort of this real world experience of hearing it performed by the actors. And from that point on, there's a flurry of revisions. You know, it's the color-coded pages and all that stuff, and everybody gets those, and everybody that cares to can sound off on them. I mean, it's expected for them to go, wait a minute, what did you do to the scene here? You know, you're shooting it tomorrow. Why did you change this so much? I mean, you have these conversations largely through email.
Do they generally defer, or do you have to really fight it out?
No, I don't. I always thought it was going to be the worst at the top, you know, or number three on the top pyramid. I thought that as you got into the major leagues, that it would be, the headaches would be major, that the micromanagement would be micromanagement.
Right.
It's not really.
So this is the show that you meant for it to be.
Well, that's if I say no to that, it's not going to be because the network or studio did anything to prevent it. It's just because you set yourself up for disappointment if you want what was in your head to be the result of 200 extra people helping you create it. I'm not David Milch, so that's not going to – I like the – I'm wrong plenty of times. And the picture in my head is valuable as a starting point. And then you make a TV show. It's – this thing is a Thursday night NBC show. But when I write, I in my head – I'm writing little movies that are incredibly important and all this stuff that you wouldn't want the final product to be. You want jokes and punchlines and you want – so it's the pipeline creates the medium. Mm-hmm. And if you're trying to write a sitcom, you're writing down it would be like a mother going into a kitchen with the intent of creating a Snickers bar. Well, why are you doing that when you can – like Snickers has to do that because of their factory. Like you can make a really, really awesome like chocolate treat because you have all this time and TLC and personal attention on it. So as the mother, I need to just – imagine what's delicious to me and what's chocolatey and count on the fact that when the Snickers plant gets through with it, it's going to definitely have a clean, pretty wrapper and it's going to be 21
minutes
long. It's going
to look like a candy bar. You know. Yeah. And what about ratings pressure? I mean, I'm sure that must have been less of a factor in the cable world than in the network world.
NBC is very patient right now. I mean, they were patient with Parks and Recreation, and they promised they would be patient with Community. So actually, to that extent, no, it's like I get pep talks from NBC about ratings that really work. They hope that your show is going to accomplish a certain amount, and they let you know when you've surpassed their expectations. As we did when we premiered after The Office, we retained more of The Office's ratings than they expected.
Right,
and they were very. Very happy about that. So was my agent and everybody.
Right.
The following week we did more like what was expected. And so because the premiere was huge, that was a giant dip. But they tell you exactly what they're expecting and why it means nothing if you get under that. And
what about cable? Do you hear about that stuff as much?
Not really. It wasn't like something that they welcomed us into. It wasn't like, hey, let's huddle up and talk about ratings.
Right.
But yeah, with this show, it is like it's an open conversation. You know.
Do you have to be more worried about salacious material? I mean, obviously, cable is cable. I don't know. Does it change the way you think and write your jokes?
The goal of the show is different with Community than it was with, say, the Sarah Silverman program. It's and they're both great. Like I love making my mom laugh and I love making my mom blush and maybe even yell at me a little bit. These are all equal. But I'm definitely with Community. I'm trying to make my mom happy, the mom in my head. Like because even though that sounds like the death knell for a writer, it's like, what are you talking about? That sounds horribly unfunny. But my mom had great taste in television when I was growing up. She watched all the best shows and that's all I mean by that is I sort of automatically run it through that filter. So it's there have yet to be any conversations of people going, you can't do that, and me going, but it's so funny. Like
right.
That hasn't really happened yet.
Dan Harmon is a television writer and producer. He's the creator of the NBC show Community. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. Matt Holzman is the producer of the show. Our theme music mashup was designed by beat architect Jason Grohman. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. If you have any questions or comments about the show, write us at thebusiness@kcrw.com. You can also listen to this or any past program and comment about the show at kcrw.com/thebusiness. You can listen to our podcast, share it with a friend, or embed it in your blog with a click of a button from our new media player at kcrw.com. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.